Cody and Brandi Rhodes are gone from AEW, and tonight was the very first Dynamite of a new era, basically, for AEW. It was an era that went from three Rhodes to just one. Only Dustin. Dustin is still there, so there is still a Rhodes presence in AEW, but the first man and the first lady, you might say, of All Elite Wrestling or no more. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, February 16, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. The road to revolution has come into greater focus after tonight's show. And I have to say that looking at the card so far, the way things are shaping up, this looks like it's going to be one hell of a pay-per-view coming up on March 6th. All of the key matches are pretty much accounted for after what we saw tonight. We just saw that main event. Just went off the air a few minutes ago. Sammy Guevara defending the TNT Championship against Darby Allin, the former TNT champion. They had a hell of a match. And it went pretty much exactly the way that I told you it would. You remember on the stream last week, I said the direction that I think for Revolution isn't Sammy Guevara defending the TNT title one-on-one against Andrade. I think Darby's going to be involved. I think Andrade's going to be involved. I think we're going to get a three-way. And it's not official, but after what we just saw in the main event, it sure looks like to me that we're headed for a three-way for the TNT title on March 6th. And let me tell you something, that match is going to be sick. That is the match to do. That's the match I'm looking forward to maybe the most on that entire show. But of course, it's not official yet. But things have now come into greater focus as far as the TNT title is concerned. As far as the World Championship goes, we have Hangman Page and Adam Cole. And it's very clear that they're going to be locking horns at Revolution. You know, we had a couple of name drops tonight on the show of Kenny Omega. First couple of name drops in a while. No update on his status, when he might be able to come back. Remember, he was going to go away and have all these surgeries. And, you know, we really haven't had any update on him since then. So I don't know if he's going to be back before Revolution as far as, you know, appearing, making an appearance. He's not going to be wrestling on the card. Could he show up? Could he play a role in the outcome of that match? It's very possible. I tend to think Omega's on his way back soon, even if it's just after the pay-per-view, but he was mentioned on the show tonight. There is going to be something there with him and Cole. That's the story. Long-term, you look ahead to where this whole Elite, you know, Bullet Club thing might be going. But there was a promo segment tonight with Cole and Hangman that did a pretty good job, I think, of setting things up for what's coming at the pay-per-view with those two. CM Punk and MJF. You heard the music there at the beginning of the stream. We had CM Punk tonight choosing the stipulation, choosing the date, choosing the event that he is going to get his rematch against MJF. It will be at Revolution. That's not really the surprise. The surprise, though, is the stipulation. You know, because we were talking last week thinking maybe Cage, maybe, you know, Wardlow barred from ringside or something, but I almost think you want Wardlow there. Wardlow, though, is going to be accounted for elsewhere on the card because he's going to be in the face of the Revolution ladder match. Two men have qualified for that match, Wardlow and Keith Lee. So you want to know where the beef is going to be? The beef is going to be in that match. There might be more beef in that match because Powerhouse Hobbs is wrestling Dante Martin on Friday night. Although I think that match would be a lot better for Dante. That's Dante's kind of match. You put Dante Martin in a big ladder match on pay-per-view? I'm not so sure about Hobbs moving on, but again, things coming into focus, and then Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson. We're going to get the match. It's going to happen at Revolution. We might be able to get our cake and eat it too, though, because not only are they going to wrestle, it looks like, at Revolution, but we may end up getting this alliance between the two of them. We might end up getting a faction, a partnership between Moxley and Danielson, possibly taking some of the younger talents under their wing. I'd like to get both. We get the match coming out of the show. We get a partnership. We get a union, right? Eddie Kingston has moved on. Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley, they're not hanging out on TV anymore. Eddie Kingston was back tonight. He's got bigger fish to fry, though, trying to help Santana and Ortiz. And Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho look like they're on a collision course. So again, the card is coming into focus. I like what I see. And I really like this show tonight. I thought top to bottom, this was an excellent episode of Dynamite. Super chats are open, so get them on in, and I will read all of your messages, questions that you may have. I thank you in advance for the support and for all the super chats that have already come in. And we're going to be able to be the booker a little bit later on in the stream. So we're going to have a lot of fun here tonight. Thank you for choosing me, by the way, for your Dynamite coverage. Show opened with CM Punk sitting cross-legged in the ring. I've never seen this man sit in such a position before. We had CM Punk sitting cross-legged in the ring. He said that if you don't know by now, you should. My name is CM Punk, and I'm better than you. And he proceeded to explain to us all the reasons why he's straight edge. He doesn't do drugs. He doesn't drink alcohol, which actually got him some heel heat in the building from all the alcoholics. But that's how he used to open promos earlier in his career. So going a little old school here at the beginning of this promo segment tonight. He said, if those words sound familiar, he first spoke them 20 years ago. It's become the foundation of his career. And he takes great pride in inspiring a lot of the younger generation. Some of them sat like him. Some of them became straight edge. Some of them became wrestlers like he did because of him. And then there's MJF. And MJF walks around like he's Punk. He tries to talk like he's Punk, but he's not Punk. Punk said that he thought he would be angry. So that he thought he would be angry when MJF beat him not once, but twice in his hometown of Chicago. But he actually said that he was proud of him. Said MJF talks about how he wants to be like Piper in Portland and Brett in Canada, Punk in Chicago. Said instead he's shitty little Max from shitty Long Island. Oh, I know some people out on Long Island who, to them, those are fighting words. You insult the fine folks of Long Island. You got to specify, by the way. You know, you've got Nassau County, you've got Suffolk County. Two very different places in Long Island. He thanked John Moxley for being his partner last week against FTR, and now he gets to pick the date and the stipulation for his rematch with MJF. And he said, you know, as far as the date and time is concerned, it'll be after sundown on Sunday, March 6th in Orlando. It's going to be at Revolution. Said he thought about putting Max in a cage, but he knows Max can climb, and he also thought about Piper in Portland. And he kept mentioning Piper in Portland, and I could see where this was going. And he produced a dog collar from a little gift box that was sitting in front of him on the mat. Pulled the paper out of the box, pulled out a dog collar. He says, you know, you want to beat Piper so badly. MJF, he wants to be Roddy Piper so badly. And he said that Piper had his dog collar match. They would have theirs. The last time we saw a dog collar match in AEW or anywhere was 2 years ago on this very show on Dynamite. Cody Rhodes one-on-one against Mr. Brody Lee for the TNT Championship. In fact, that was the final match of Brody Lee's life. And Tony, I think. Tony Schiavone did point out the last dog collar match involved Cody. So already I'm seeing messages from people, oh, this has to be a work. The whole Cody Rhodes thing has to be a work because they mentioned his name on the show. This is not WWE, where when you leave the company, you are completely dead and you no longer exist. Yes, they took Cody off the sides of the trucks already. I don't know if you saw the truck wraps. Cody is already off. So they took him off that. They took him out. I think they took him out of the intro to the show tonight. Which is all standard stuff. But Tony Khan is not Vince McMahon in that when you leave the company, you are dead to the company. And you are barred from mentioning that person's name in most cases. There are exceptions. The fact that they mentioned Cody's name a few times on the show tonight does not mean that it's a work. People are so desperate to want to believe that they're being worked, or not even that they're being worked, that they're not being worked. I need to recognize that it's a work so I don't get worked. Like it's such a horrible thing to get worked. It's not a work. And even if it was, the fact that they mentioned Cody's name on the show doesn't prove a fucking thing. Again, this is not WWE. Not every company operates the way the WWE operates. So he called MJF out onto the stage. And then he held up a photograph into the camera. The camera zoomed in, and Punk had a photograph in his hand of a young Maxwell Jacob Friedman posing with CM Punk at what looked to be an autograph signing somewhere. And it looked like it was maybe from Punk's run when he was in, you know, on the ECW brand, or very early when he was called up maybe to the WWE main roster. So we're going back probably 15 years or so. And he holds the photo up, and he said it was a huge day that day. It was a huge day in MJF's life. To him, it was one of the greatest days of his life, one of the most memorable days. To Punk, it was just a Friday. He told MJF that Sunday, March 6th, would be the worst day of Max's life, but to him, it's just going to be Sunday. And the mat would not be stained with Max's shitty spray tan. It would be stained with his blood. MJF walked out, had a very concerned look on his face. He went to go speak. He thought better of it. And instead of saying a word, he stormed off. And the whole time, he had this very concerned, very serious expression on his face. And he left without saying a single word. We never saw him again. We didn't hear from him at all tonight on the show. CM Punk managed to do something tonight that's never been done before. He rendered MJF speechless. He was without speech. He had nothing to say. And that was the entire segment. The Piper Valentine dog collar match at the first Starrcade was a brutal match. You know, if you ever went back and watched it, it was a brutal match. And actually, that match is the reason why when Roddy Piper, not long after, came to the WWF and Vince McMahon brought him in, you remember when Piper initially came into the company, he was not a wrestler. He was brought in, and he was managing. He didn't wrestle for a while. It was months before he wrestled. The reason that they brought him in as a manager is not because Vince McMahon said, well, I want to bring in Roddy Piper as a manager. He brought him in as a manager because he couldn't wrestle because he was still recovering from injuries that he sustained in the dog collar match. He got his eardrum ruptured. I think he lost 50% of the hearing in his ear. I'm not sure if he ever got it back. So it was a brutal match, and likewise, the dog collar match 2 years ago with Cody and Brody Lee. I remember, you know, when I did the review here on the stream and I talked about the match, you know, and I said I was struck by the amount of blood in the match. Now, since then, we've seen a lot of blood on this show. So we know that TNT and now TBS, they're willing to push the boundaries with how much they allow in terms of the violence, in terms of the blood. But at the time, I was like, man, it really caught me off guard that TNT would even allow a match like that that had that much blood. It was a very bloody, very violent affair. Rodimus Prime, $30 for Bully the Clown. You hear the crowd. You heard the crowd. Thank you, Rodimus. With the Bully the Clown super chat. I love it. I will always stop what I am doing to acknowledge the Bully the Clown. So those two matches were you know, very violent, and I think we can expect more of the same here. Blood and violence at Revolution, which sounds to me like a fine way to either, you know, blow this thing off or just take it to the next chapter, whatever that next chapter is. I'm not sure that there won't be a third match. You know, MJF won the first one. Punk, I think, is going to win this one. I do believe Punk is very likely walking out of there with the winner Revolution. And if that's the case, then they're all knotted up. You could do a third match between them. But I think that this entire segment, I thought Punk's promo was really good. And I thought that MJF played off the fear factor really well, trying to get the stipulation over. Like, he realizes he's in deep trouble at Revolution. So both guys played their part, I thought, perfectly in this segment. Punk's promo work, I mean, it's not breaking news. We know CM Punk is a very good promo, even after all these years. So I thought this did a great job of setting things up for their match next month. Now, that led into another favorite segment of mine from this show. Honestly, the opening half hour plus of this show was just on point. You know, the great promo work in the opening segment led right into a great match. The American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, one-on-one against Lee Moriarty. They showed Melissa Joan Hart in the audience before the match started. Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, in the audience the night of Dynamite. No longer a teenager is Sabrina, but she is a very big wrestling fan. I've known that for a number of years. Danielson offered a handshake at the beginning, and as young Lee went to accept his handshake, Danielson pulled back on it. Now, remember what Danielson talked about last week when he said that he wanted to see a more violent side out of young Lee? So I was looking forward to this match because one of the things that I was really interested in when I heard that Danielson had signed to come over to AEW, as much as I would like to at some point see him and CM Punk one more time, and we're going to get him and Jon Moxley and maybe him and, you know, other WWE people he's worked with before, I also want to see him work with people like this. Lee Moriarty, he's a young guy, he's a star on the rise, but he's not a star yet. He's not a star yet. Most people don't know who the hell he is. And I think they will. That's the kind of person I want to see Bryan Danielson working with. Bryan Danielson can work against the bigger names, but he could also go out on a rampage here and a Dynamite there and have a match with him and have a match with, you know, a guy like a Wheeler Yuta. He's been in the ring with him before. People like that. Those are the matches I want to see him have. And tonight is a perfect example of why. This match right here is exactly the kind of match that I'm talking about when I say that I want to see him doing more stuff like this. This is where I also think he can be really useful to AEW. You know, we've heard the stories in recent weeks of Tony Khan asking him to work behind the scenes with Jade Cargill. I think that's fucking brilliant. I mean, of all the people on the AEW roster that if I could, I would go to and say, please, work with this woman behind the scenes. Just work with her, you know, show her some of the fundamentals, answer her questions, guide her along. Danielson is the one that I would go to. If she can pick up even a little bit from Bryan Danielson and pick his brain and learn from him, he's one of the best in the world. It's not just a nickname. I mean, he's been the best for a very long time. I know it's not shocking, but he's pretty good at this pro wrestling thing. So you can do stuff like that behind the scenes, but also when he gets in the ring and works with them, I mean, he's the perfect person to learn from. And he's the perfect person, I think, to give them their best match. This is the best Lee Moriarty match I've ever seen. Danielson slapped him across the face. Oh. B. Vincent, what's going on? B. Vincent, boy, we're bringing out the clowns tonight, aren't we? With the fuck Bully Ray. As Tuxedo said, anybody can learn from Bryan Danielson. Danielson slapped him across the face on what was supposed to be a rope break, locked on a Romero special before turning it into a modified dragon sleeper. Moriarty countered, and he went for the Alex Shelley Border City stretch. As Excalibur pointed out, he credited Alex Shelley for the hold. And this was hilarious because he mentions the Border City stretch. And Jim Ross, I forgot exactly what he said. It was something like, what? Like, what'd you say? He was like alarmed by this. He had no idea what Excalibur was talking about. And Excalibur mentioned, well, you know, it's an Alex Shelley special. But just the way Jim Ross reacted, what are you talking about? I love the transformation from the Jim Ross that you would have seen 30 years ago, or you would have heard on commentary, you know, 25 years ago. He was the guy back then who would be filled with all this information and would be giving you the name of the hold, you know, the technical name of the hold. Jerry Lawler wouldn't do that. That wasn't his job. And now Jim Ross has become that guy all these years later. He doesn't necessarily know a lot of these weird names that have been given to these moves. And he's just like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, you know, it's like the angry grandpa. So it's like, you can see. Yeah, they say eventually you become your parents. That's kind of like Jim Ross now in commentary. So Moriarty sent Danielson to the floor with an uppercut, and Bryan was able to avoid a dive. He tied him up in the ropes, started laying in the yes kicks. They went to the commercial. There was I don't even know how to describe this, but I shall try. There was a cool-looking headstand, leg lock, striking battle where they were tied up like a pretzel in this move, and they were both like on their heads. But they were throwing strikes at each other. And the fans loved it. And they really got a reaction out of them. And they were giving these guys an ovation for it. Danielson applied the LaBelle lock. He forced Moriarty to the ropes, landed another strong slap right across the face. And all that served to do was fire up Moriarty. And he came back with strikes of his own. Danielson cut him off with a rolling elbow. Moriarty locked on the Border City stretch. Danielson powered out, hit a backdrop suplex and the running knee, stomped on Moriarty's head, and transitioned into a triangle sleeper hold with the double bicep pose. That was my favorite part of the whole match. They had an overhead camera shot. They were ready for this. So they had an overhead camera shot as the referee called for the stoppage. He's got his legs wrapped around this guy. This guy's passed out. And Danielson is just laying there and he's posing. He's got the double bicep pose going. It was fantastic. He's such a great dick. You know what this was? This right here, I hate to even use this word because every time I use this word now, I think of Michael Cole. But what this was vintage American Dragon from Ring of Honor. This was Ring of Honor Bryan Danielson here. You know, if you've never seen Bryan Danielson before, you would look at the guy and think, all right, whatever, he doesn't look like much. You know, he seems like a nice little guy. But boy, you know, he's got this in his matches. He can have this vicious, mean streak about him, and he could just be a dick. He can be a real asshole in his matches. That's the Danielson I missed. That's why I'm glad we got that back here in AEW now. But the inevitable match with him and Daniel Garcia is something I'm very much looking forward to. You know, Garcia in some ways reminds me of a young Bryan Danielson. So I look forward to the day that we get to see them in the ring together. But after the match, Brian asked for a microphone, and he said he came out here to teach young Lee a thing or two about violence, and he asked the crowd. He polled the crowd, and he asked them if he passed or failed, and they seemed to agree that Lee passed the test. And he said, well, this is why I don't trust the American public with anything. Which is probably a good rule of thumb to live by. He continued, he said that that really isn't the reason I'm out here on the microphone right now. And he reminded all of us about asking John Moxley to team up with him and, you know, teach the young guys how to do this. And he called him out. He wanted his answer. I want an answer from John Moxley. So here comes Moxley out through the crowd, grabs the microphone. And even Mox, you know, I talked about Punk in the opening segment. Moxley was on point here. He had a lot of shit that he had to remember. As I'm listening to him, that's really what struck me. He had a lot of shit that he had to get in, and he hit all the key points. And he told a little story in the middle of it as well. He said that, you know, when he was young and poor, kind of like Lee. Lee reminded him of himself when he was first getting into the business. And, you know, he was young, he felt like he had nothing to lose, and he told a story about being at an independent show. The very first time he ever met Bryan Danielson and stepped into the ring with Bryan Danielson, Danielson was late, travel delays or flight delays. Danielson gets to the building. He's already in his gear. And he sees Danielson, who's walking through the kitchen into the arena, you know, into the ringside area, and they get into the ring. And Moxley said he came up short that night against the best wrestler in the world, and he's had more shots against Bryan Danielson, but he's never been able to beat him. He said when he showed up in AEW, everybody else was scared of the best wrestler of all time, but he saw it as an opportunity to put one more head on the wall that he's never been able to take down. Now the Dragon, though, doesn't want to fight him. The Dragon wants to stand beside him. And he said he tried, but he really couldn't think of one good reason to say no to his offer. But then he got to thinking, and he said, you know, the thought occurred to me. And maybe this man is not exactly being completely on the up and up. Maybe the reason why he wants to align with him is because he doesn't want to find himself standing opposite him, across the ring from him. And if that's the case, he goes, he's already beaten him. And he said this as he pointed to his head. He's like he's playing mind games. He's gotten the guy's head. He goes, if that's the case, I've already won the battle. He asked Brian if he wants to join him because of what they could create, or is he afraid of John Moxley. Said, look, I'm not saying yes to your offer, but I'm also not saying no. And I immediately thought of the Jim Carrey thing, so you're saying there's a chance. So he said he was giving a non-answer here in this segment. He said he's going to leave it up to Brian, but He's not going to stand side by side with anybody until he bleeds with them first. And Moxley left the ring and he walked through the crowd. An excellent promo, I thought, from Jon Moxley. And I love the final line. I'm not going to stand next to somebody side by side, shoulder to shoulder, unless I've already had the chance to bleed with them first. Basically throwing down the gauntlet and saying, you and I have to lock horns first. I need to know where you stand here. You and I are going to join together. So I thought that this was great. And as I said at the beginning, it looks like we might get the best of both worlds, where they're going to have a match at Revolution. And then coming out of that match at Revolution, they're going to keep this thing going, and these two might work together, and they may have a little faction of their own and bring a couple of people under their wing to join them. I would love to see it. But I told you, we have to get the match. You've got this pay-per-view coming up. AEW only has 4 pay-per-views a year, right? So you want to put the biggest matches possible at the top of the card. Bryan Danielson, first time in AEW, one-on-one against Jon Moxley. That is a match that you can co-headline Revolution with. You're not going to, you know, they tease the idea, for example, I'm going to get to the tag team stuff in a second. Maybe they'll become a team and they'll go after the tag team titles at Revolution. You could do that. You could prolong things and then do the first singles match maybe in Vegas, a double or nothing. I think you do the match now. And that line at the end of the promo, that seems to imply that's what's going to happen here. I think you have to do the match. Do the first match now, right? Because you know they're going to go in there, they're going to have a great match. They're both going to bleed, they're going to beat the hell and chop the hell out of each other. I don't know if there'll be a decisive winner one way or the other. I don't know if it'll be a draw or something. And then coming out of it, there's a lot of potential, I think, for there to be entertaining television. You can get months worth of television out of a partnership between Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson before it all falls apart, and then you bring them back together and they have another match. That's what I would do. And I think that's where they're heading with this, and I thought this was a great segment. So they opened the show back-to-back, very strong segments, I thought, and did a very good job of setting things up for the pay-per-view. Again, if you are joining late, hit that like button. This is your Dynamite review. We are talking AEW tonight on what I thought overall was an excellent show. Coming off that segment, we had the Face of the Revolution ladder match qualifier. We've already had Keith Lee qualify. He launched Isaiah Cassidy into orbit last week in his debut. Keith Lee is going to Revolution. It's a big guy to be in that ladder match, but he is in the ladder match. And speaking of big guys, we had Wardlow here going one-on-one against Max Caster. In his pre-match rap, Caster called Wardlow MJF's little bitch boy. Probably not the wisest thing to be saying to this man before you step into the ring with him. Anthony Bowens was out there with Caster. He went to grab Wardlow's boot to try to trip him early in the match. His timing was off in a couple of different spots in trying to, you know, stick his nose in this match. At that point, they went right to the picture-in-picture. And during the break, Wardlow was suplexing Caster all over the place, suplexed him on the floor. Caster avoided a spear. He sent Wardlow into the ring steps. Wardlow set up for a powerbomb to Caster. So now they're back from the break. He sets up Caster. He gets him up for a powerbomb. Now, the referee is distracted, I believe by Bowens, but the referee is distracted. And Caster had his chain that he wears around his neck. He had a chain in his hand. And he punched Wardlow in the head with it. Referee didn't see it. He went up top. He landed the mic drop elbow. And they got a great close near fall out of it, but Wardlow kicked out. Wardlow came back with 3 powerbombs for the win. Wardlow has qualified, to the surprise of no one. Wardlow is going to be in the Face of the Revolution ladder match on March 6th. He is officially in. After the match, Bowens attacked Wardlow. No help from Sean Spears. So Sean Spears is out there with Wardlow. Doesn't lift a finger to help him when he gets attacked. Of course, Wardlow doesn't need him. He made his own comeback. He powerbombed Bowens. But then as soon as Wardlow turns his back and starts posing on the buckles, here comes Sean Spears. And he's got the chair, and he hits Bowens with it, and he hits Caster with it. And Wardlow glances you know, behind him and again looks very annoyed that this guy is coming in and stealing his thunder. Again, the slow burn continues here with Wardlow. We had a backstage segment with Tony Schiavone interviewing Britt Baker and her crew, along with Mercedes Martinez. Britt Baker told Martinez that she better win tonight against Thunder Rosa in their no disqualification match. And she said that when Mercedes is done, she, as in Britt, will be the most powerful woman in AEW with the best crew and the best sensei. And when she mentioned sensei, my first thought was, I'm thinking some giant rat is going to walk into camera view, but we didn't get Master Splinter. Instead, we got the Cobra Kai guy from The Karate Kid. He walks into camera frame. Martin Cove is his real name. They put it on screen later, Martin Cove. To me, he's just the Cobra Kai guy. And Martinez said, okay, it's time to go murder a bitch. And she split. Baker asked the Cobra Kai guy, what should she do if she loses the match? And he told her, end her and show no mercy. Which really, it reminds me, I really should start watching Cobra Kai. Is it any good? Should I start watching? I saw Karate Kid years ago. But I've heard positive things about Cobra Kai, so I'm not sure if I should start picking up with it. Sweep the leg guy, is that what we should call him? Sweep the leg guy. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to interview the AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page. And out to the ring comes Hangman. We had a... So, he didn't get to say much. Schiavone was going to ask him about the Texas Death Match last week against Lance Archer. And Hangman didn't really say anything before he was interrupted by Adam Cole. Adam Cole, who got a big pop coming out. Boy, I don't know about you guys, but the internet told me that Adam Cole was buried after that loss to Orange Cassidy a few weeks ago. Now, I don't recall. Where were they tonight? What city? Were they in Nashville? I think they were in Nashville tonight. Whatever city they were in tonight, I guess these people didn't get the memo. Maybe they just didn't see that episode of Dynamite. But I was told by all of the brain surgeons on Twitter that I was wrong and Adam Cole was buried. Didn't look like it tonight. He got a nice reaction walking out to the ring. So he gets into the ring. I did notice the sign in the crowd, the one lone sign that says Adam Cole has a dad bod. I did see that sign. So Cole is in the ring with him now and he told the crowd to give Adam Page a round of applause for the match that he had last week and, you know, all the battles that he's been through. Cole pointed out that he has been a champion everywhere that he has been, and he's going to take the AEW World Championship as well and take the title away from Hangman Page. Page asked Cole how it felt to see his friends build a wrestling empire without him. And the AEW World Championship, he said, is the only world championship that Cole will never have. Cole said that Page blossomed into a great champion, but the reality is he's always just been known as the other Adam. Page was ready to throw down. Cole said, look, I have respect for you. I'm not here for a fight. I'm not here to fight you. I'm just here to talk. And so someday we're going to fight for the AEW World Championship when that day comes. May the best man win. And he goes to walk off. And you know what? The first thing I thought of, because I knew. I've been waiting. I figure Kyle was probably back on TV this week. He's been, you know, gone for a number of weeks. He just had a baby girl. I knew Red Dragon was coming out. As Cole went to walk away and he started up the ramp, and Hangman's in the ring and he's got his back turned, and what happens? Red Dragon attacks from behind. There's Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. And they attack Hangman from behind. Then Cole comes back to the ring and they all put the boots to him. It reminded me of the Hogan Rock segment that set up their match at WrestleMania 18. Because they're in the ring together, right? They shake on it. Rock, I think, you thought, okay, that's the segment, right? They kind of showed respect for each other. Rock is going to go leave. He gets to the top of the ramp, and he poses. He puts his hand up in the air like The Rock does. And then here comes Hall and Nash. And they attack The Rock from behind. The whole thing was a setup, and all three guys beat down The Rock. For some reason, this made me think of, not that this match is as big as that one, but just the way this whole thing was set up, where they wanted you to think that Cole was being very magnanimous and he was going to walk away, but you just knew that his friends were lurking in the shadows. So, Red Dragon back on the show tonight. They're putting the boots to him. And one of the other things that Cole mentioned in his promo, he's talking about friends and friendship. And, you know, how they, you know, him and the Bucks haven't really been hanging out. The Bucks haven't mentioned him recently. Even your boys in the Dark Order, what's been going on? They're supposed to be your boys. They're supposed to be your crew. You guys haven't been together in months. Well, the Dark Order must have heard that, because as this guy is being beaten down, here comes the Dark Order, and they run down, they chase off Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly. And all of a sudden, and it felt very random, maybe he took it very personally, I don't know, but we had Preston Vance. What's going on, Mr. J? Mr. J in the chat there. Preston Vance, number 10 of the Dark Order. He snaps, and he's grabbing all these security geeks in the ring, and he's throwing them around. He's suplexing them around. You know, he took one of them and threw him out of the ring onto the pile of security geeks on the outside. Ten lost his shit here. I figured the reason they did that is because later in the show, we're going to get the announcement that Ten is wrestling Adam Cole on Rampage on Friday. See, they have their own formula for this stuff. I'm kind of, you know, I'm figuring out what their formula is as far as setting matches up for the Friday show. And sure enough, later on in the night, we were told that it will be Adam Cole one-on-one against Preston Vance, number 10, of the Dark Order, coming up on Rampage this Friday. That came in a backstage segment later on where we had the Bucks, we had Cole, we had Red Dragon, we had Brandon Cutler filming the whole thing. And they were, you know, again, Cole mentioned the match with 10 coming up on Friday. And the Bucks and Red Dragon were kind of arguing in a friendly way about the tag team battle royal. Or battle royals, I should say. So I've talked about how the card really came into focus tonight for Revolution. And we got a better sense of where things are going and what all the key matches are going to be next month. Well, we also have a better sense of what they're doing now with the tag team titles, because Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus are the tag team champions. They're having not one, but two battle royals, two tag team battle royals in the next 2 weeks to determine both number one contenders for what will be a three-way match, a triple threat match for the AEW tag team titles of Revolution. I think two battle royals is complete overkill. There's no need to have two battle royals, even if it's not in the same night, if it's back-to-back weeks, or if it's one on Dynamite, one on Rampage, however they're doing it. Two battle royals is overkill. Have one battle royal, and the last two teams, or the last representatives of the last two teams in the battle royal, win. You're crowning two number one contenders. You got plenty of teams in AEW. There's no shortage of people. Have one big battle royal, and the last two teams represented in the match go on to Revolution to challenge for the tag team titles. I just think having two different battle royals is overkill. But again, we are going to be getting those over the next couple of weeks. The Bucks are going to be in it next. I think actually both of them. The Bucks are going to be in it next week. Red Dragon will be in it. Possible one of them will win, and maybe the team that doesn't wins the other one. We'll see how they go with this, but I just think two battle royals is overkill. Chris Jericho and Jake Hager against Santana and Ortiz. The Inner Circle explodes. The Mega Powers, it is not. But it is the potential implosion here of the Inner Circle, which is okay with me. Eddie Kingston made his return. He had an orbital injury. He's been out for a number of weeks, but he was back tonight. He was in the corner of Santana and Ortiz. But two Royal Rumbles is good? No, it's overkill. Where have you been? I've said it for years. Two Royal Rumbles is overkill, but you got to have one now for the men and one for the women. That's how it is. You have a men's division and a women's division. They don't have two tag team divisions. They have one tag team division in AEW. Therefore, have one battle royal. It's not a hard concept. So we had Santana going right at Jericho right from the start of the match. Jericho tags in Jake Hager, who beats down Ortiz, hits the Hager bomb. This is ahead of the picture-in-picture break. Back from the break, Ortiz hits a clothesline that allows him to get the hot tag. Back to Santana to get him into the match. He ran into a codebreaker from Jericho and a spinebuster from Hager for an earfall. Jericho hit a running bulldog. Ortiz cut off the lion salt attempt, though. When Jericho jumped, landed on the middle rope. This was kind of strange because we saw this as well, right? Didn't we? We saw this in the match that the Inner Circle had against American Top Team. Might have been a Full Gear. And it was a spot, I think, with Junior Dos Santos where Jericho went for a lion salt and, you know, jumped up and he had to, like, pause forever because I think maybe Junior was out of position. It looked terrible. This wasn't quite that bad. But again, Jericho jumps and Ortiz is, like, holding the rope, but I don't think he was actually physically restraining Jericho. And Jericho is just standing there. It's like waiting for Santana to come up behind him to take him down and attack him. So that looked a little weird. But Santana and Ortiz hit the street sweeper on Jericho for a near fall. Santana charged in for a cannonball in the corner, though. Jericho caught him and transitioned into a lion tamer. Santana got the rope break. Eddie Kingston got up on the apron. And Jericho went and hit his springboard dropkick, knocked Eddie down to the floor. Ortiz caused a distraction to Jericho that allowed Santana to hit the discus clothesline and to pick up the win. After the match, Jericho went right after Eddie Kingston, and they were separated by a bunch of referees. So there's another match now that is not official, but will be for Revolution. It'll be Chris Jericho one-on-one, most likely one-on-one. I mean, look, I guess they could probably... Well, they don't actually have enough members of the Inner Circle to do a six-man tag. Sammy is going to be occupied. If they're opposing Santana and Ortiz, they don't have enough men. So clearly it'll be one-on-one, Jericho against Eddie Kingston. I thought it was weird that Jericho, not a huge fan of Jericho, kicking out of the street sweeper, but then losing to a lariat. You know, I know it's the discus lariat. I mean, I'm assuming Santana's adopted the move. You know, it used to be Brody Lee's move. Maybe that'll be his singles, you know, finish. Because I think I see a singles future for Santana. I do. I could see Santana one day as TNT champion in this company. So maybe they're trying to get that move over, but I don't know. It was kind of weird. He kicks out of the street sweeper, but, you know, pinned by the lariat. All that matters is that Santana and Ortiz, they got the win. This was a win that they needed to get. They got the win, and that's the most important thing here. We have Thunder Rosa one-on-one against Mercedes Martinez. No disqualification. It was Mercedes Martinez in her AEW return. I mean, she had that one appearance years ago in a Battle Royal. Call it her debut, call it her return. When she showed up and cost Thunder Rosa her match in the TBS title tournament. So that's how this whole thing got started a few months ago. They wrestled on Rampage a few weeks ago. That was where Rosa won by disqualification. So this was the war to settle the score here tonight on Dynamite. Rosa came out with a chair. Martinez was already waiting for her outside the ring with a pipe in hand. And they came at each other. Rosa got the better of it. Bell rang. We were officially underway. Almost immediately, they pull a table out from underneath the ring. Rosa then threw Mercedes into the barricade. She knocked the barricade over because it's, you know, these flimsy old-school barricades, not like the heavy black ones that WWE uses, like the hockey ones. So she just collided with it, knocked over the barricade. They end up brawling into the crowd. Rosa climbed up on one of the metal barriers, and it was very unstable. I mean, that it did look like she was going to take a tumble. Very unsteady. Not really a high crossbody because she wasn't up that high. We'll call it a medium crossbody. Off the barrier down onto Mercedes Martinez. So they go to the picture-in-picture. They come back from the break. They prop the table up against the ring apron during the break. So as soon as they come back from commercial, right, the table, like a ramp, the table is propped up against the apron. And on the apron, Mercedes is standing there. She's got Thunder Rosa, and she drops Rosa down onto the table with a fisherman buster. The only issue is she didn't hit the middle of the table. She went out a little too far, and Rosa landed on the far end of the table. So the table broke a little bit, but it didn't break in half. So it wasn't really a botch. They just didn't break the table all the way through. But the table did break a little bit. Back inside, Rosa countered a top rope move that Mercedes was going for, countered it into a Hurricanrana. She placed the trash can over Mercedes' head and drop kicked the can, covered her, but only got two. Rosa went up top. Martinez stopped her with a trash can lid, just whacked her in the head with it. And then she sent Rosa flying off the top with the German suplex. Rosa got wrecked on that German suplex. I mean, she folded her up. I mean, her neck, she landed right on her neck and got folded over. I mean, it looked like not a fun landing for Thunder Rosa. Martinez followed that up with an elbow drop, and it looked like she slipped a little bit coming off the top, which actually made the elbow look more brutal because it kind of looked like a botch. I mean, I guess it was kind of, but it actually made the elbow look more brutal than it probably would have looked if she would have hit it normal. I wrote in my notes, it looked painful, probably because it was. Rosa hit a crucifix bomb, though, and then hit the Fire Thunder Driver on a pile of chairs that Mercedes had put together in the middle of the ring. Down she goes, 1, 2, 3, Thunder Rosa picks up the win. After the match, Rosa raised Martinez's arm, and they kind of glared at each other in a respectful way, showing mutual respect. That didn't make Britt Baker very happy. She stormed down to the ring with her entourage, and she walked over to Cobra Kai guy, who was in the front row, her sensei. What should I do? And Martin told her, she's weak. Now finish her. And at that moment, Jamie Hayter attacks Thunder Rosa from behind. Hayter and Rebel are now both attacking her. Baker hands the pipe to Mercedes Martinez and says, here, use it. And she has what Excalibur called a crisis of conscience. She doesn't know what to do. Mercedes hesitates. She doesn't immediately attack Thunder Rosa, and so Jamie Hayter attacks Mercedes Martinez. She nails her, blindsides her, and the segment ended with Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez both laid out in the ring. I smell a tag team match. Probably on Dynamite next week. I smell a tag team match. Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez against either Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter or Jamie Hayter and Rebel. I'm thinking Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. So keep that in mind. We had a very brief but kind of creepy, cryptic video, whatever word you want to use, another House of Black vignette with Malachi Black speaking. Brody King was with him. And at the end of the segment, really what it was building to, you know, Malachi's sitting there. He's got cards that he's overturning on the table in front of him. And Brody King asks him, who are we waiting for? Either who or what are we waiting for? And Malachi said history. And in the background, you can see there's a third person, but you can't really see who it is. And the segment ends. And I thought the same thing that I know a lot of you were thinking. Buddy Matthews. And the reason I think Buddy Matthews is because Fightful had the story earlier today that AEW was very interested, if they haven't already signed him, in bringing in the former Buddy Murphy from WWE. He's been a free agent now for a few months. Buddy Matthews is waiting to land somewhere. I'm surprised he hasn't landed already somewhere. You know, he's been all over the place. He wrestled Okada for New Japan at the Battle of the Valley show back in November. And we actually had him in House of Glory a few months ago. He was in the ring wrestling, ironically enough, Malachi Black, somebody who he has a history with. So if Malachi is talking about history, then you put two and two together, it's not hard to figure out that it's probably Buddy Matthews. And if that's the case, and if I'm right, if everybody is right about that, that's a great pickup, I think, for AEW. It's not somebody who's going to come in and be a difference maker right out of the gate. He's not going to come in and be a headliner for them or anything like that. A lot of these guys aren't. Andrade came in. It's not like he was a headliner. Malachi came in, and I like what they're doing with Malachi. I wish they would do more. He didn't come in and immediately headline, although, you know, kind of did. I mean, he had the feud with Cody. I don't have any illusions about him coming in and being a main eventer. He can come in. He's going to have an opportunity to prove himself. The thing about Buddy Matthews is he's a great fucking worker. He has great matches, you know, and he's not a tall guy, but he's in great shape. You know, it's hard to think that this guy was doing 205 live stuff and he was a cruiserweight champion. You think cruiserweight, you don't think of a guy that looks like Buddy Matthews. You know, he keeps himself in great shape, but the guy can work his ass off. So I think he's a great addition to the roster, you know, if and when they make it official. And I think him being aligned with Malakai, given their history, is pretty cool. And I think he would make a fine addition to the House of Black. So hopefully it turns out to be him. I could see Matthews at some point being, you know, like a TNT level guy, TNT champion, like Miro. Like Miro. What we've seen with Miro so far in AEW. And I don't know what the deal is with Miro, when he's coming back. I know he had an injury. I was under the impression that it wasn't that serious. He doesn't have an obvious program for Revolution. They're getting ready for the pay-per-view, so maybe they're waiting. And then after Revolution, I would expect to see him back on TV. You know, it's kind of like when you get this close to WrestleMania. There are exceptions, but, you know, as far as somebody debuting or as far as somebody who's been out maybe with an injury for a long time, in the past, they tended to wait until, you know, the night after WrestleMania. So I think with Miro, maybe they're approaching it the same way. But I would expect to see him very soon. You know, he's been gone for a while. I guess he's been gone since Full Gear. It's been a few months. Main event on this show was Sammy Guevara defending the TNT Championship against the former TNT champion, Darby Allin. Two of the young pillars. Armed Anderson. Two of the young pillars. Oh, by the way, on that subject, what happens to poor Arn Anderson now? Arn Anderson doesn't have anybody to manage. Well, I guess he can manage his son. Yeah, you know, I guess he can take over as the coach for his son. Brock. I don't know. Arn lost his star client on this show. So he may not be getting much television time now. Poor Arn. Sammy is still carrying around both TNT belts that he won in the ladder match against Cody a few weeks ago. We had loud dueling chants of "Let's go, Sammy. Let's go, Darby." To start this match, these people were amped up. You can tell. It's always fun when they do a match like this. And we saw this with Darby and MJF. You know, when I hear about these young pillars, right? These young kind of homegrown AEW stars. These are the guys that are going to be in the main events. These are the guys that are going to be wrestling for the world championship. You know, you look further down the road. A guy like Wardlow, you know, I'd put him on the list too. But when these guys are in the ring together, the crowd reacts. The crowd, the AEW crowd, looks at these guys as a big deal. The AEW audience reacts to a Darby Allin and a Sammy Guevara now in the way that they would, you know, they would have reacted a year ago, 2 years ago to a Chris Jericho or someone like that who already had an established name. You know, to the AEW crowd, these guys were already headliners. You could headline an episode of Dynamite with these two and it doesn't feel out of place or weird or anything like that. Dynamite is one thing. It won't be very long, I think, before we start seeing a match like this headlining a pay-per-view. So the crowd, you know, the energy was up here for this main event. And the two of them were up top early on. Sammy dropped Darby straight down onto the top turnbuckle. He just dropped him. And Darby took this ridiculous bump. I mean, you talk about a fucking buckle bomb. This was a buckle bomb. And Darby just came straight down, looked very scary, and he bounced all the way, you know, down to the apron, down to the floor. Sammy followed up with a beautiful top rope senton all the way off the top rope down across Darby's back. Darby was hanging. He was draped over the top rope. And Sammy just nailed him perfectly with the senton. Darby fell to the floor as they cut to the final picture-in-picture of the night. During the break, Sammy hurt his leg. He landed on it on a moonsault press. So when they came back, Darby made the leg his target. That did not stop Sammy, of course, because Sammy can't help himself. That did not stop Sammy from hitting a top rope Spanish fly but he hit it with an awkward rotation. He was selling, so he didn't come, you know, when he does the top rope Spanish fly, you do that total 180, 180, 360, whatever. He had this awkward rotation, but he was selling the knee. Like, he couldn't put all of his weight down on the knee. So, you know, nice job of selling the knee there, even if only for a few seconds. Got up, he was limping around. Darby caught him in a figure four leg lock. Two of them started exchanging open hand slaps to ultimately break the hold. Darby went for the flipping stunner that he does, but Sammy countered out of it. Sammy got Darby up for the go to hell, but Darby escaped. And he used his Last Supper pinning combo, but only for a near fall. Darby did finally hit the stunner. Sammy went out to the floor. This was the highlight of the match. Sammy goes out to the floor, and Darby is getting ready to hit his missile dive. And Darby comes charging with the suicide dive, and as he's coming through the ropes, Sammy timed it perfectly. On the way down, he catches Darby and hits a cutter on the floor. You know, it's like when Randy Orton had to time that RKO all those years ago against Evan Bourne. You know, Evan Bourne did all the work. He's the one who went up for the shooting star press. All Randy had to do was just time it perfectly and get his body in perfect position and just put his arm, right, in position for the RKO and just fall. That's all he had to do. But it looked great. So all Sammy had to do was just be in the right spot. Darby will do the rest. And they timed it perfectly and he hit the cutter on the floor. So I thought that was very cool. He laid Darby on the apron. He climbed up to the top rope. He went for a giant senton dive. Darby rolled out of the way. And Sammy just crashed and burned on the ring apron on the way down. I mean, the bumps that these guys were taking were pretty crazy. So Sammy is obviously in a world of hurt. And Darby gets him back inside. He's thinking coffin drop. Darby is halfway across the ring, face down on the mat, right, laying on his stomach. And Darby's got to clear some distance if he's going to hit this. I mean, he could have, but he's got some distance to clear if he's going to hit the coffin drop. He goes up for the move. And all of a sudden, here comes Jose. Andrade's manager, Jose, or his assistant, I'm sorry. He comes from out of nowhere. There he is. He's up on the apron. And right behind him is Sting. Now, Sting came out when Darby made his entrance. They did the fist bump, and Sting went to the back. So Sting was not ringside for the match. So they must have come through the crowd. Sting is right there behind him. He yanks Jose down off the apron. Maybe he was stalking him the entire time and hoping that he would interfere. Sting was right there. And he throws Jose into the crowd. Bryce Remsburg, the referee, is distracted by this. Now, I'm not quite sure why Bryce Remsburg was bothering with this, because these two guys had no part in the match. They were not in the ring. They weren't even outside the ring. They were in the crowd. And yet Bryce is looking at what's going on in the crowd. He's not doing his job. That allows Andrade on the opposite side of the ring. Darby is still up on the top rope, back turned, right? He's getting ready for the coffin drop. Here comes Andrade, climbing up the ring steps. He's got that tablet, and he whacks Darby in the head with the tablet, knocks him out. So now Darby, he's still up top, but he's sprawled across the top turnbuckle, unconscious. Referee did not see it. He did not see him get whacked with the tablet. Sammy gets up. He grabs Darby in position for the GTH, hits the move, flush on the nose, 1, 2, 3, and Sammy Guevara is still the TNT champion. I said last week on the stream, and there's a reason I say these things. Some things I'm not sure of, some things I say with conviction. And I was pretty convinced last week that they were going to, and that they absolutely should, go in the direction of a three-way match of Revolution. You do Darby, you do Sammy, you do Andrade. One on one on one for the TNT Championship. And it's pretty clear to me that that's the road that they're going down here. Seems pretty obvious, I think. Matt Hardy ran down to the ring. He blew right past Andrade in the aisle. Here comes Matt Hardy. And he slides into the ring and he immediately starts, you know, he mounts Darby and starts attacking him. Sammy tried to stop him, but Andrade hit him with the tablet from behind, knocked him out. Sting got into the ring, but Andrade bailed. He didn't want any part of Mr. Stink. And so Andrade left the ring, and he held up both TNT belts in the aisle while celebrating with Matt Hardy. So a really hot main event with a cheap finish, but one that had to happen, I think, to get from point A to point B. Point B being the three-way. Now, yes, Darby did get pinned tonight, but he got fucked over. So Darby absolutely has a case for a rematch. The show ended with Andrade holding up both TNT belts. It's not a hard leap to make that we're going to get a three-way at the pay-per-view. And that match is going to... That match... If that match does not steal the show, I'd be very surprised. You put those three guys in the ring together, you give them time. We haven't seen Andrade in the ring very often lately. I feel like he's in a position where he also is dying to go out there and have just a show-stealing match. You put him in the ring with two guys like Darby and Sammy, it's going to be hard for them to have anything but a great match. I just hope nobody dies. It's my only hope. I hope Darby doesn't kill himself. I hope Sammy doesn't kill himself. Andrade, I don't think is... I'm not worried about Andrade. You know, even when Andrade had the match with Cody, if you remember that big bump at the finish when Cody got all burned up, Andrade, he didn't want any part of that fire. I would not be surprised if they planned the match. Andrade's like, you do what you want. I'm not going in the fire. I'm not a fucking moron. So I think Andrade will take care of himself. But that match is going to be fucking insane. And I can't wait to see it. But this was an excellent show tonight. I think the Road to Revolution is looking great so far. Again, the key matches are all set up. You got Cole challenging for the AEW Championship. I guess crawling out of the grave that he was supposedly buried in. He'll challenge for the AEW World title. It looks very likely we're going to get Danielson one-on-one against Jon Moxley. We're going to get a dog collar match with Punk and MJF. We've got the ladder match. We know Wardlow is in, and we know Keith Lee is in. And we'll find out who the other members are. A three-way for the tag team titles. Probably a three-way for the TNT title. Probably Jericho one-on-one against Eddie Kingston. Probably Britt Baker against Thunder Rosa for the women's title. I mean, that's a full card right there. That's a hell of a card. And I'm sure that's not all the matches. So Revolution is shaping up to be a great show. Rampage this Friday airs 3 hours earlier. So be aware, Rampage is airing at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific because of this whole NBA All-Star Weekend celebration that they're having. So Rampage airs at 7 Eastern on Friday night. Show has Adam Cole against 10 of the Dark Order. We've got Trent Beretta taking on Switchblade Jay White, making his in-ring debut in AEW. And we've got Powerhouse Hobbs against Dante Martin in a Face of the Revolution qualifier. And we're going to have another Serena Deeb 5-minute challenge. So that's coming up on Friday. Dynamite next Wednesday has Penta and Pac against Malakai Black and Brody King. And perhaps we will have the debut of the third member of the House of Black. Eddie Kingston Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho will have a face-to-face confrontation. And we're going to have the first of two tag team battle royals to determine the number one contenders at Revolution for the AEW tag team titles. Those are the lineups for the next two shows. That's right, Breathe with the Switchblade. Jay White in the ring on Friday night. He had a hell of a match that I got to call the other night with Cashflow, Ken Broadway, and House of Glory. Jay White is someone who needs to be on television more often. Which is weird to say because, you know, he's part of New Japan Strong. He's done stuff in Impact. Now he's going to do some stuff in AEW. Obviously, he's with New Japan. So he's with all of these different promotions. And yet we're not getting enough Switchblade on TV. So we need to change that very soon. You know, one question I did have about Cody is that if Cody goes to, you know, somebody mentioned the tattoo, and that's true. If Cody goes to WWE, is WWE also signing the neck tattoo? Or are they going to make him laser that shit off? I don't know. Apparently, they don't want Brandy, which I think is hilarious. You know, I will say, and Brandy, again, I've said before, Brandy and Cody both get a lot of very... undue hate. The hatred for them on social media is just whatever you think of Cody and if he has an ego or whatever, the hate is way over the top. Way over the top. And Brandy seems like a nice enough lady. But one thing I will not miss, one of the positives of the breaking news that we got this week about both of them being gone from AEW, after that god-awful segment on television a couple of weeks ago, we don't have to worry about Brandi Rhodes facing Dan Lambert or Brandi Rhodes against Paige Van Zandt. I hope we get Paige Van Zandt at some point. It could be against somebody else. Maybe Paige Van Zandt against Thunder Rosa. Maybe Paige Van Zandt as a babyface even at some point against Serena Deeb. I mean, come on. That could be a hell of a match. Brandi Rhodes and Dan Lambert, no more segments on TV. Thank you, God. That's one of the silver linings in all of this. Let's go to the poll. And there you go. 88.5% thumbs up. Taking on all the thumb down votes, 11.5%. Overwhelmingly positive score for Dynamite tonight. This was an excellent show. This was an excellent show. You know, when they deliver, they deliver. And tonight, I do believe that they delivered. I'm being told that WWE is signing the neck tattoo to a multi-million dollar deal with Cody. Can you imagine if they sign the neck tattoo to a multi-million dollar deal after telling all those wrestlers they cut that they were being cut due to budget cuts? But they give a contract to the tattoo. I mean, that fucking thing has a life of its own. Ever see that thing? It's like the symbiote. However the hell you pronounce it. Before we get into all the super chats, I do want to remind all of our channel members, and I know some of them are in the chat right now as we speak. Tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, going to be live right back here on YouTube with our channel members, all levels, whether you're a superstar or a legend. Better Call Saul Monster. I'm opening up the phone lines for members only. I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about. It was a very slow, boring week of wrestling news this week, but I'm sure we'll find something to discuss. I'm sure there must be something for us to talk about. So that's a little perk for all of our channel members tomorrow night. And also for our Legends tier members. So if you are a top tier member here on YouTube, if you are a Legends member, look at Asuka. Asuka's a legend, giving the thumbs up. Asuka agrees. Hey, Kyle, thank you for the sub. But for our Legends tier members, it is now up for your listening pleasure. Episode 13 of the Saul Monster Sounds Off from Super Bowl Sunday, 2008. This is a good one. My live thoughts from being in Madison Square Garden at the Royal Rumble, John Cena's shocking return, and I do go into detail about what the reaction was like being in the building that night when the timer hit for number 30, and out came John Cena when nobody was expecting him to be there. Talk about Brock Lesnar's debut fight. UFC 81, my excitement for the New York Mets signing Johan Santana, who eventually went on to throw the first no-hitter in Mets history. And my Super Bowl prediction for the Giants against the spying Patriots. So that's all up on episode 13. There you go. It is up for all of our fine legends here on the YouTube channel. Hey, you know, I forgot about Pharaoh. That's right. What happens to the dog? I guess Brandi will have to just watch the dog at home, I guess. I don't know. I don't think Pharaoh is... You think Vince would give him like a British Bulldogs gimmick where Cody comes down to the ring with the dog? Probably not a good idea, right? After they brought the dog out that one time on one of the pay-per-views, scared the fucking shit out of that poor dog when the pyro went off. I still can't believe they did that. I still can't believe they actually thought that was a good idea to bring Pharaoh out. That poor dog was so petrified when all of that pyro went off. I don't think we ever saw the dog again on TV. Anyway. Yes, yeah, so the one person who asked, that Royal Rumble pay-per-view in 08 that I was at, that I talk about on that episode of the show, that was the debut of Jeff Harvey First time we heard Jeff Harvey's name mentioned on WWE television by Mike Adamly. Let's take a look at your messages here, see what you guys have to say. We got Tuxedo T Servo coming in hot with the first super chat of the night. If Cody is returning to WWE, I wish him well, but hope he remembers that the promises of an old carny are fleeting. They are, unless you get it in writing. That would always be my advice. If there's something that you want so badly that you're willing to sign a contract for it, that it is up to you to make sure that it is in the contract in writing. Otherwise, they breach the contract and you can leave and go somewhere else. Joshua Carlos with the $4.99. Would you like to see Bryan Danielson against Pac? Of course. Absolutely. Says, I think that match would be incredibly brutal in terms of the physicality between the two. What do you think? I think you're 100% dead on. Absolutely. Turtlehead, all of this Cody and Brandy stuff will make for a great season of Roads to the Top. All the people they convinced to go there, I'm not buying that they left. Roads to the Top, I believe, or whatever plans they had for Roads to the Top, at least according to PW Insider yesterday, has been canceled. So I don't know if that's official. I don't know if that was, I'm not aware of there being any kind of official announcement made by the network. I'm not even sure the second season was ever officially greenlit. I had heard that it was a go, but I don't think TNT ever made a formal announcement about there being a second season. So, no, there will not be another season of Roads to the Top. I know some people are holding on to this hope that it's all a work. I wasn't sure myself at the very beginning what to make of all this, but as more information has come out, it's pretty apparent that this is not a work. But you're never going to be able to convince people that it's not. And you know why? Because Cody himself made statements a couple of months ago that would lead one to believe that maybe it is a work. I just think that it was, you know, something he said to kind of get people interested in whatever it was that he was going to be doing. And then things took a different turn. And this is not a work. Dan Richards, Cody leaving is a work. Here we go. Cody leaving is a work. I'm telling you, you're never going to be able to convince everybody. They dropped his name more on this show than any show he wasn't on. Until he is in WWE, this is a work. Mystery entrant for what? He says mystery entrant for, and he doesn't say for what. Nick Grosso with a $9.99. Thank you, Nick. Says, great main event, and it was great to see Sabrina the Teenage Witch and John Kreese. Maybe next Daniel LaRusso, Johnny Lawrence, and Terry Silver will show up. These all Karate Kid people, I assume. All right, talking about the Karate Kid. Food Hive with the $19.99 Super Chat. Joe Karate, it's not. It's not. You just sound silly. Food Hive, my love for AEW took a major hit at the loss of Cody. He is the reason I fell in love with wrestling again, besides you. Well, thank you. He became my favorite character, and I cannot help but admit I don't know if I'm going to continue to watch AEW. Well, I think that's kind of silly to, you know, not watch AEW just because Cody is gone, but, you know, you do you. I mean, to each your own. Now, the question is, does that mean you're going to start watching WWE? Because there's some good stuff there, but there's a lot of shit that you're going to have to stomach if you plan on watching WWE every week. So I hope you're prepared for that. Epsilon Sama, Cody Rhodes is responsible for the creation of AEW. Without Cody, there is no AEW. I am disappointed that Tony Khan let him go. This is a bad look. Flamethrower with the $5. At least Cody kept his promise to never challenge for the AEW World title after losing to Chris Jericho a few years ago. I love you too, Joe. That's true. That's true. Cody, one of the few to keep his word on a stipulation. Although I think a lot of the people who say that it's a work would tell you that the idea is that he will come back and use the fact that he left to say that, well, now he's signed a new contract, and so therefore he can wrestle for the championship. It's funny because everybody for a while now was trying to come up with, like, they thought Cody was going to go heel, and clearly he did not want to go heel. And I wouldn't be surprised if we come to find out that that factored into what happened here, that there was a, as much as it may have been a money issue, that there was a creative breakdown as well, where, Tony Khan is somebody who, whatever you want to say about him, there have been examples where they've done stuff creatively that didn't work. They did something with the Dark Order attacking the Elite a few years ago that was horrible. It came off terrible on television. And they pivoted and they went in a different direction, right? They've done that a couple of times on things that just did not work. So I do believe him when he says that he listens to the fans and he tries to, give the fans what they want. He listens to fan feedback. And you have to know that he saw the reactions to Cody and he probably felt the same way, that this guy would be, is ripe for a heel turn. And Cody just didn't want to go heel. He could kind of play with the people and tease it, but he did not want to go heel. And maybe Tony Khan realized, the way to go is to go this way, and Cody didn't want to go that way. He just wanted to keep doing whatever he was doing. And maybe there was a creative breakdown there because Cody didn't have the kind of creative power he may have had at the beginning. There's going to be more that comes out about this, I think, as far as the creative end of things. As more information comes out, would not at all be surprised if we find out that had a lot to do with it as well. Hulkling93, enjoying some Magic Spoon. I've noticed Dynamite has opened with more talking segments since moving to TBS, but tonight advanced a lot of narratives. Well, they're heading into the pay-per-view. I assume that's why, because if you look at all the segments on the show tonight, it was all about setting up Revolution. And they had already promised us that Punk was going to announce what the stipulation would be and when the match with MJF would be. So I didn't know they were going to open the show with it, but it kind of makes sense. I don't want them to make a habit out of it. I think it's okay to do an opening promo every now and then. The problem with WWE is for so many years, they just went overboard with it. They had their formula and it's like, well, we're going to open the show every week with, a 20-minute fucking Triple H promo, and we'll have this guy come out, and then here comes this guy, and here comes this guy, and here comes this guy. And they'll all take turns waiting, being very kind, and letting the other person speak, not interrupting them. They had their formula, and they just took it to the max. But anyway, thank you, Hulkling. I appreciate it. Anti-M Bishop. Evening, Solomonster. Evening, sir. The fact that TNT put a rerun on primetime and not Rampage on Friday is a bit telling to me. Excited for GCW this weekend. Chris Underwood. I have my own YouTube channel eating spicy stuff, and I wore a Didn't Happen SmackDown Solomonster shirt. Hope you don't mind. You're the man. No, I don't mind at all. That's old school. That goes back to the days where SmackDown was a completely useless show and nothing really of note ever happened on the show. So I made a shirt in the form of the old SmackDown logo that just said didn't happen. And people seem to like it. So, and honestly, I think it might be making a comeback soon. SmackDown is not exactly lighting my world on fire. Took it to the max. Solomonster getting real 80s with it. Oh, I got a lot of 80s references. Wait until you get to the one where I talk about, how something is all that in a bag of chips. We haven't, or is that 90s? But we haven't gotten there yet. I haven't cycled through all of my 80s and 90s nostalgia. Corey. What's going on, Corey? Got Corey Mervin dropping a $4.99 super chat. Says, in my opinion, if Cody is genuinely going to WWE, let's pray to God that Vince, we use him well in the future, not just for the 2-month-long WrestleMania 38 pop. Well, I said this on Twitter the other day, and now I see a bunch of other people are agreeing and saying the same thing, which is that if Vince McMahon were smart, And you could say a lot of things about Vince McMahon. He is very stubborn. He is very set in his ways as far as what he likes and what he doesn't like. Vince McMahon is not a dumb person. You don't get to be Vince McMahon and run a company that is making $1 billion a year by being stupid. So let's just get that out of the way first. If Vince McMahon was smart about this, and let's say they signed Cody, right? Because it's not a done deal. Oh, speak of the devil. Look at that. That's one of the new super chats. There it is. Cody with his golden shovel. But let's say they sign Cody and it becomes official. The smartest thing Vince McMahon could do is to treat Cody Rhodes like gold. As gold as that shovel you just saw there in that photo in that super chat. Because then it sends a message. I mean, that's really what it does. It sends a message to the other talent in AEW, and a lot of them, you know, they may not be as big of a name as Cody Rhodes. They don't have the Rhodes name, right? It could be someone lower down on the totem pole, but even still, they've been told for so long, and I think rightfully so, that if you go to WWE, maybe things work out for you, but more than likely, you're going to be in a situation that you don't like being in. You're not going to necessarily get the opportunities that you were hoping to get. You might get the money, but you may end up being very unhappy. That's why a lot of people went the other way and left WWE in the first place to go to AEW, because they weren't happy. But if Cody goes there, he's Mr. AEW, right? He's one of the founding fathers of this company. He was an executive vice president in this company. And if he goes to WWE, goes back there, and is booked like a star, and is not buried, is not mocked, is not made fun of, is not slotted in the middle of the card somewhere wrestling, you know, fucking Madcap Moss. If he goes and is actually treated as a big deal for more than just a month or two, it shows the people on the other side that, you know what, maybe the grass is greener, and maybe, you know, when my contract comes due, I hope to stay in AEW, but you know what? If I don't think I'm getting enough television time, or if I want a raise and Tony Khan is not willing to bump my pay, maybe I'll go look somewhere else. Maybe AEW is not the only option. Maybe I can go to WWE. I think a lot of those people are going to be in for a rude awakening, because I don't think WWE is going to change the way they do things, but it's just a smart move on their part, even if they're completely disingenuous about it. If you're Vince McMahon, you roll out the red carpet for this fucking guy. You treat him like a big deal. Play the long game here. It's a strategic move. That's the smart play. Will they do it? Time will tell. It's a risk. There's no doubt about it. It is a risk for Cody. And we'll get into why and all that. I'll get into more details about this on the podcast on Sunday. Anderson Blitz, Adam, incredible shrinking Cole should go to a gym. So Anderson Blitz, not a fan of Adam Cole's physique. Like the guy in the crowd tonight with the sign that said Adam Cole has a dad bod. Food Hive with the $19.99 super chat. Don't get me wrong, I love AEW, but Cody was a huge part of that. He helped create something I dedicate my Wednesdays to. That helped me cope with life and brought me to the stream, which helps with my mental health. And brother, we are happy to have you here on the stream. Food Hive has been a huge supporter here on the streams and a good friend of the show. And we are very happy to have him. Groovy Goose, no, there is no non-compete. Cody could technically show up in Saudi Arabia if they wanted him on Saturday. There is no non-compete. That's actually a question that I have about all of the AEW contracts, and I don't think I've ever gotten an answer. I haven't read anywhere. Does Tony Khan put non-competes in these contracts? Or does he just not do them? I've never been able to get a straight answer about that. I'm not sure. But Cody is free and clear to go where he wants, when he wants. Rodimus Prime with the $30 super chat. Nice way to start the stream. MJF's theme is the ringtone on my phone. It has really grown on me over these past several months. So, big fan of the MJF douche theme, as I call it. I might open the stream with it every week. I think I might. Austin with the $5 super chat. "You're obsessed with me," Punk says as he holds up a Polaroid of him and MJF as a young child. Kind of sus, if you ask me. A little creepy that he's walking around with a photo of this young child in his pocket, but, you know. French fry slut. What is going on? French fry slut. Haven't heard from her in a few weeks. That shot of CM Punk asking to be his Valentine while holding a dog collar and chains had me feeling some type of way. You know, I hadn't thought of it like that because I just wasn't thinking of it in that way, but I can see where if you are somewhat of the female persuasion watching that, perhaps that would, you know, get you a little hot. Carlos Lugo, if you were Tony Khan, which 5 AEW contracts would you not renew? I don't like answering questions like that. I think, look, there's plenty of people under contract who probably only appear on Dark, who, if their contracts were to run out, nobody would even care. It would not really impact the company at all. There's lots of people like that on the roster because he signed so many people. And so many of them are not wrestling, you know, every single week. I don't want to make a list of who I want to see fired or lose their job or anything like that. So, Ricardo De Jesus with the $10 super chat. Did you happen to read Hikaru Shida's comments on her struggles to survive the current AEW? What are your thoughts? If you did, keep up the great work. I did. That was a couple of weeks ago, and I commented on it already. I didn't look at it the way some people did as a major critique or an attack or whatever on AEW. I mean, she was just talking about how the Joshi wrestlers were more prominently featured at the beginning, and it was really the pandemic that prevented them from being able to travel back and forth and really hurt them as far as their standing in the company. And she did better than most. You know, a lot of them have not even come back. Riho was gone for a very long time. So I read it, and it was good. I think other people should read it as well. But I just saw some people saying, oh, she's shooting on AEW, and I didn't look at it that way at all. That's not how it read to me. But she made a lot of valid points in what she was saying. B. Vincent 86, Buddy Matthews equals House of Black member. I do believe you are right. Thank you for that 30, by the way. That's the Bully the Clown super chat. Always entertaining TV with the $9.99. Not AEW related, but curious. Like Rock and McMahon are to Austin or Edge, and Punk are to Cena, who would you say are two of Roman Reigns' greatest rivals? I think Brock Lesnar should be one of them. They've had a couple of WrestleMania matches already. They're about to have a third. I don't know that any of their matches have been as good as their first one at WrestleMania 31. I was there for that match. And, yeah, everybody talks about the Money in the Bank cash-in, but honestly, even before the cash-in, they were having a hell of a fucking match. So I would put Brock on that list. And if I had to pick another name for Roman, it's kind of like the Joker to his Batman. I wouldn't say Brian. Rollins, maybe. I almost wanted to say Bray Wyatt, but Brock for sure is one of them. And I might go Rollins. I might go Rollins on the other. Dry chicken without flavor. I will admit, hearing the news and details of Cody Rhodes leaving AEW was pretty deflating for me. I almost considered not watching Dynamite tonight. Carlos, thoughts on the rumor that WWE is trying to get Austin to have a match at WrestleMania? I'll be talking more about that on the podcast on Sunday. I've got some thoughts on that, and so we will save it for that. So tune in. Team Forward with the $2. Britt Baker must believe Cobra Kai never dies. I'm telling you, man, everybody's got nothing but positive things to say about Cobra Kai. Brian Becerra, $15 super chat. Enjoy Dynamite tonight, and I will believe it when I see it if Cody goes back to WWE. Willie Gag and Bob with the five. Five straight shows for me now. Really liking the pace. Not really feeling Hangman outside of matches, but Sammy is killing it so far, and MJF is gold. Oh, I've been corrected in the chat. It's not Seth Rollins. It is Seth freaking Rollins. I'm sorry. I apologize. Dried chicken without flavor. You know it's all about the Bob. Oh, is that the new lyrics to the Adam Cole song? Frank Aquilino. Dynamite was a great show. Side note, the Thunder Rosa and Athena match last Saturday from Warrior Wrestling was awesome. I heard good things about that match. And I also saw the shoot at the very end where Thunder Rosa went off on that person in the crowd, I guess, who was heckling them. I guess somebody in the crowd was heckling and said something about, you know, Ember Moon and her weave or something. I don't know what else may have been said, but Thunder Rosa was not happy. And she grabbed the mic and she went off. So I would not want to get Thunder Rosa angry. Joseph Brooks, buy or sell on which title had the best matches for it. Not looked better, had the better matches. Winged Eagle or Big Eagle? The better matches. I don't know. I mean, the Winged Eagle had some pretty epic matches. Hogan Savage, Hogan Warrior. Are you talking work rate? I mean, is that really what you're talking about here? Ah, it's tough, man. It's tough. So many great matches with that bell, whether it was the big epic ones from my childhood, like Hogan Warrior at the Sky Dome, which had two belts, actually. But then I think of all those great matches that Shawn Michaels had and that Bret Hart had. And, you know, Flair won the Royal Rumble that year, and he was awarded with the Winged Eagle. The Big Eagle, you know, that's the Attitude Era. That's the one over my shoulder. Well, there's two of them. You can't see them all, but... Well, it's funny you mentioned that, though, because those are the two belts that are hanging on the wall behind me. I value them both equally. There were a lot of great matches for that Big Eagle belt as well with, you know, Rock and Triple H and Austin and Kurt Angle. You know, I associate those guys with that belt, but I also look at that. It's a very brief period. You know, the Winged Eagle was around for a decade, and the Big Eagle was really only around, I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about, what, 3 years? You know, the Big Eagle debuted in 98, and it was gone by 2002 when the Undisputed Belt debuted. So, a relatively short period of time. I have to go with the Winged Eagle. Yeah, I have to go with the Winged Eagle. Alto Johnson, I meant to say indie wrestlers last time. Yes, I got your email. I figured that's what you had said. And I think the answer is the same. To the question that you asked on the stream last night. I think that, yes, certain indie wrestlers can get over. I think someone like Matt Cardona is proving that right now. The guy is killing it. You know, he's in GCW as their top heel. He's in the NWA. He's the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion now, whatever that belt means anymore. You know, I mean, he'll probably make it more relevant than it's been in a very long time. He'll make that belt more relevant than it was on Trevor Murdoch, and he'll make it more relevant than it was on Nick Aldis. So he's doing a lot of things now that I never would have expected him to do. He completely reinvented himself. He's having the time of his life. You know, he's also the digital champion, isn't he? The digital media champion or something, I think, in Impact Wrestling. He's all over the place. Indie wrestlers can get over. You know, they can succeed in that way, but not all of them do. Nayef Alsafar, thank you for the $4.99, Nayef. Always very much appreciate that. Hey, Dennis, there is a, for channel members, one of the perks for them, we do the occasional live watch-alongs for classic matches. In fact, we're probably going to be doing another watch-along for another classic match next month, tied into WrestleMania 13. But the first one I did was a few weeks ago. I did a live watch-along for the 1992 Royal Rumble, and that is up for all channel members only, regardless of what tier you are on. It's archived, so I don't think he's a member, but The 92 Rumble, I did do a watch-along for that. Not with JD, but I did do a watch-along for the channel members. So if that's something you're interested in, it is up in the archives. Dry chicken without flavor. Private Party should join the Jade Cargill brand. Mark Sterling and Fantasy Booking can give Private Party their own nightclub in New York. Fuck Matt Hardy. Jared M. with the $35 super chat. What is going on, Jared? Jared agrees with me, right, on the Winged Eagle being the better of the two belts as far as the matches and the match quality. Great show, he says, and Cody back in a WWE ring. I'll believe it when I see it. Kevin Velasquez, it's time to be the Booker T. Come on, man. Dry chicken without flavor. Pharaoh the dog against Lily the doll in WWE. Please do not put that evil on me, please. Darth Panic says, thumbs up. I agree. Hit that thumbs up button. KC in the chat says, would I consider reposting my King of the Ring show from years ago? I love that one. That show is up in the archives. You can go download it and listen to it right now. I believe it is, I could be off. I want to say it's episode 228 or 229. I think it's one of them. I did this King of the Ring special years ago. So you can find it there. Hey, Stinga! Look at this. Stinga just became a Sound Off superstar. Not to be confused with Mr. Stink from AEW. This is the real Stinga here. Stinga will be able to tune in live tomorrow night to the call-in show when I open up the phone lines. Brian Cyrus with the $5 super chat. Any chance the WWE can get Cena back and have Cody against Cena at WrestleMania? No. Not going to happen. In fact, John Cena just signed on. I don't know how many of you saw it. John Cena just signed on for a live-action Looney Tunes movie. They're doing a live-action Looney Tunes movie around the Coyote and the Roadrunner. And Cena, I think, is a lawyer or something in the movie. Anyway, they start filming in New Mexico at the end of next month. So even if he wanted to be there, John Cena will not be at WrestleMania. Jamin John, Austin in-ring return rumors. I can't give hell yeah to that. At this point, I don't want a 57-year-old Austin back in the ring. John Cena's bald spot with the $2 super chat. We were just talking about him. But John Cena's bald spot says, would you like to see Cody against AJ at WrestleMania? If they bring Cody in for a WrestleMania match in time, you know, for one this year, Cody against AJ, I don't want to see it at WrestleMania because I want to see AJ and Edge. That's the match I want to see. I have no problem with Cody and AJ at some other pay-per-view, but not a WrestleMania. Do not pass go. Buy or sell Buddy Matthews and the Bryan and Moxley stable. Would love to see it, but I mean, he doesn't really qualify as one of the young up-and-comers that they want to take under their wing. But if they want to have at least one guy in the group, you know, like a veteran presence, I mean, he would be fine. I would just prefer that he... I like the idea of him being in the House of Black because of the history between them. So that's really where I would prefer to see him go. Biblical Adrian. Will Cody main event a WrestleMania suit? No. External Shockwave with the $9.99 super chat. JD and Chi-Town Smark. By the way, happy birthday to Chi-Town Smark. Saw that it was his, I believe today, in fact. I believe is his birthday. They're saying that it is a work and could be linked to Shane McMahon and his exit from WWE. I think the theory can be true since Cody said both sets of fans will be on a bizarre ride. No. I don't see that. Ed Weber, Cody has always thought his star shine brighter than it does. Maybe he thinks this is his Hogan to WCW moment when in reality he's 8 months away from 24/7. Maruthi Fan, or Maruthi Ram, I should say. And then I believe we are all caught up. Maruthi says, boy oh boy, CM Punk likes MJF behind the scenes. He's supporting MJF to build a strong character in AEW. I think CM Punk sees a lot of himself in MJF, and I think he's, I think from day one, I think when he came to the company, he had this guy, you know, he had him eyeballed from day one as somebody that he had to work with. And they actually went to it quicker than I thought they would. I thought they would hold off on it longer, but, you know, for the most part, even though I did feel like building up to that first match, they were repeating a lot of the same things in their promos, and it was kind of getting old. I've enjoyed the feud so far, and I think that dog collar match of Revolution, you know, that's a brutal stipulation. And I think that that would be, you know, the kind of match where you could just blow the whole thing off with a dog collar match. But I feel like if Punk wins, and I'm thinking he's going to win, they could bring it back for a third match, you know. And don't forget, you know, they still have the Wardlow turn that they haven't done yet. When do they pull the trigger on that? Do they do that, you know, during the Punk match? Does he in some way cost MJF the match, either on purpose or by accident? Yeah, you can't forget the whole Wardlow aspect to this. Juan in the chat says, he's laughing, he says, this is going to be more like Brett going to WCW. Well, I mean, if that's the case, then I suppose we are... We're going to have Cody being the special referee then for Sami Zayn against Johnny Knoxville at WrestleMania. Boots! My boy Boots is joining us tonight. Boots says, how about Layla Hirsch in Moxley and Danielson's group? I love how we're booking the whole group out. We don't even know for sure if there will be a group. I'm hopeful there will be. We're already fantasy booking members for the group. I like that, though. I like the idea of Layla Hirsch in the group. If they want to have a female in there, I think that could work. Absolutely. She's the closest thing they have. I mean, maybe outside of Serena, she's the closest thing they have to like a shooter type in the women's division right now. Casey, yes, I did hear that Suzuki is coming back to America. Everybody needs to be on high alert. They have to put out that, you know, have they have the terrorist alert system where, you know, they have the different, like the color-coded stuff. They should have some kind of color-coded system like that for when Suzuki comes back to the States. So right now, we're on high alert. It's a yellow alert. When he gets to our shores, it'll be a red alert. Hey, it was great the last time he came here. He was everywhere. You know, I mean, he was here for a few weeks, and he was in AEW, and he was in GCW. He hit all the different independent promotions. It was great. God, you know, we should try to get him in House of Glory is what we should do. Oh, I would love to call a Murder Grandpa match in House of Glory. We got to make that happen. We have to make that happen, man. We got to bring him to Queens is what we got to do. Dr. NXT Scorpio, hope Cody joins Orlando 32837. They need ratings. Yes, that was something we were talking about last night on the NXT stream. I did do a live stream for Vengeance Day, and there's a lot of relationship segments and kind of, you know, all kinds of soap opera-y type shit on NXT right now. And I said, it's like they're trying to turn it into a like Melrose Place or Beverly Hills 90210. And I said, it should be Orlando and then whatever the zip code is. And I didn't know what the zip code is. But apparently it's 32837. It's basically what NXT has become. Meltzer said, Chris Statlander isn't an alien anymore. Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. I did see something about that. I don't know if it was in the Observer or if it was in one of Meltzer's daily updates. And Meltzer is, he's something else. He reported on this like it was a legitimate thing. Like Chris Statlander, Tony Khan has deemed that Chris Statlander is no longer an alien on AEW television. And I just thought to myself, like, was she ever really treated like an alien? Like a real alien? I don't believe so, but he just stated it so matter-of-factly. Like, Dave's he's a weird guy. Zombified guitarist has been a channel member for 3 months. The only way Cody is going to be at the main event of WrestleMania is if he buys a ticket. Bliss fan, Undertaker didn't just have a neck tattoo of his wife's name. He had a tattoo across his Adam's apple that he had to have lasered off. Now, I've heard that having a tattoo lasered off, and I'll let all the tattoo people tell me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that it's not exactly a fun procedure. I cannot imagine having a tattoo lasered off my fucking Adam's apple. Why would you ever get a tattoo of a woman's name on your Adam's apple? A girlfriend. A wife. I mean, look, if you want to get your mother's name tattooed, okay, fine. She's your mother. She's always going to be your mother. I kind of get that, I guess. But if you're in a relationship, and this goes for men or women, if you're in a relationship, do yourself a favor. Don't get a fucking tattoo on your throat of the person's name. Because chances are, the moment that you get that shit tattooed on your neck, that relationship ain't going to last. So do yourself a favor and get the tattoo somewhere else. Don't get it on your Adam's apple. Exactly. Tuxedo T Servo in the chat. It was true love until it wasn't. That is a great, I love that quote. It was true love until it wasn't. Taker actually had it covered over. Is that what he did? I thought he had it lasered off. Did he have it covered? I thought he had it lasered off because I could have sworn there was a period of time where it faded very slowly, as if he was having it lasered a little bit each time. George Devine dropping the $5 super chat. If Cody does return to WWE, who would you like to see him face at WrestleMania? Maybe Rollins. Rollins is a possibility. Yeah. I would say Rollins is a possibility. I mean, look, again, Edge, AJ, they're all possibilities. They're all possibilities. Anybody who is not either Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey, or Becky Lynch is not locked into anything for WrestleMania. And if they get Cody, all of a sudden they weren't expecting to, they get Cody, they'll shuffle certain things around if need be. Rollins, to me, I mean, Rollins is probably the most obvious one. I mean, I'm trying to think of what the other obvious match would be with someone who isn't already occupied in a major match. You're not going to have Roman against Cody at WrestleMania. So I would think Rollins would be the most likely candidate. I don't know. You know, you got Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre looks like he's going to be wrestling fucking Baron Corbin. I think Drew McIntyre would love to wrestle Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. So maybe they could do that. They could do Drew and him. I don't know. I know he and, yeah, I mean, someone mentioned the Miz, Amiibo. Cody and Miz are like this. I mean, they're, you know, when Miz, who got married recently? Somebody got married. It might have been Cardona, right? On New Year's Eve, I think Cardona and Chelsea got married and they put a picture out and you saw like Morrison was there, Miz was there, Cody was there. They're all friends. So I'm sure Cody would love to wrestle Miz, but to me, I mean, I can't even imagine, like, Cody coming in and then let's say the first person they slot him with is the fucking Miz. I mean, look, possible. He better know what he's getting himself into. I hope the money is good. Because he needs to know that he's taking a major risk by doing this. Dry chicken without flavor. I'm predicting next year that Okada or Tanahashi will arrive in House of Glory. Well, hey, if I have any say in the matter, if my voice carries any weight, I would love to make that happen. Nick Grasso, Cody and Brandy against The Miz and Maurice. Oh, God. Now, apparently Brandy is not coming along for the ride. They don't want Brandy. They don't want Brandy. So we're not getting the return of Eden Styles to WWE. All right, let's take a pause here. If more super chats come in, I will read them, but I want to scoot on over to be the booker. Let's book some matches.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
let's book some matches. This is the brand new look for Be the Booker. Put a lot of time into this for you people. So, gotta make it look all pretty and all professional. We have the men's and the women's are now updated. And what we do here is we book a men's match and a women's match and try to book a main event match, see how it turns out. Lots of options here, so this is going to be very interesting to see what we end up with. But let's see. We'll begin with the men. How about that? We're going to book ourselves a men's main event. It is Be the Booker time here on a Wednesday night. Look at all these names. All these legends. All these Hall of Famers. And some surprises. Let's pick our first one. It is Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi. Now, there's a hell of a pick. What's going on with Kota, by the way? He's still out. I guess he, I think he dislocated his, was it his shoulder or what? Not the exact injury that it was, but he hurt himself back in October and has not been heard from since. So hopefully he'll be back soon, but that's a hell of a first pick right there. Kota Ibushi, former IWGP heavyweight champion. Let's find out who he's going to be facing here. I think it would be very difficult for him to have a bad match against almost anybody. I think we already have a winner on our hands. Let's see. Ibushi one-on-one against Jake the Snake Roberts. That is an interesting match. You know, I'm kind of pissed that I didn't pick this in the tournament that we're going to be doing in a few weeks. Yeah, that's one of those matches that you just never even think of. Both in their prime, Kota Ibushi against Jake the Snake Roberts. And this, by the way, in this particular image, this is Jake from his most sinister. This is Jake from 1991. This is when Jake was doing, in my opinion, his best work as a heel in this feud with Randy Savage. Jake was not known necessarily for his in-ring work in the way that Kota Ibushi is. So I just think the clash of styles would be very interesting. I call this one a winner. I call that one a winner right there. A winner is you, is what I say. So let's hope that we have better luck with the ladies here as we queue up the women's Be the Booker. George Devine dropping $2. Cody against Miz, Battle of the Reality Shows. Ugh. Yes, I agree. And Food Hive says the Be the Booker curse will strike Taker or Cody. Well, let's see how it goes for the ladies here. First choice. Let's pick one. Let's pick one. It's not stopping. let's try that again. I think the ladies, it didn't want to stop. It just wants to keep going and going and going. There we go. Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan, what do you guys think? Liv Morgan, who lost all those matches to Becky Lynch. Everybody thought Liv Morgan was going to win the championship, and I laughed, and I laughed. Then they thought she was going to win the Royal Rumble, and I laughed some more. Let's see who Liv is going to be facing. Liv Morgan, one-on-one. Against pie-faced Toni Storm. You know, Liv Morgan against Toni Storm, in and of itself, is not a bad match. Liv Morgan against pie-faced Toni Storm is no buys. And so we give it the old buzzer. We give it the buzzer treatment. Let us never forget this image of Toni Storm, this image right here. This and the image of her sitting in the ring crying when she lost to Charlotte Flair will be the lasting image that most people have of Toni Storm in WWE. This right here is what Cody needs to be weary of if he goes back to WWE. This right here is a perfect example of what could happen to poor Cody Rhodes if he goes back to WWE. And he should be well aware of this because he was already in WWE once before. I think we all remember Stardust. Everybody remembers Stardust, right? Stardust. Everybody remembers Stardust, right? Tomas. Tomas, I saw you, Tomas. I saw your Super Chat, $4.99. Brandy has inebriated Cody's naive mind. He is not thinking clearly with all that brandy on him, or possibly in him, since she wears the pants, it seems. So Tomas believes that brandy is leading Cody astray. I don't believe that is the case. I don't believe that is the case. Philip Moreland, I think Cody versus Orton could be a compelling story, with Orton taking the credit for Cody's success, culminating in a match at a pay-per-view. Yeah, it's a match I would expect to happen, just not a WrestleMania. I think he was talking more about WrestleMania. Look, Cody could come in after WrestleMania. They could debut him on TV the night after WrestleMania. I just think, you know, for a company that is already doing 2-for-1 deals on tickets to WrestleMania, which is not good, and they want to try to fill Texas Stadium on back-to-back nights, they're going to need, in their mind, I think, as many attractions as they can come up with. And they have such little faith in their own roster of talent outside of the big names. If they get Cody under contract in the next week or two, I think it would be impossible for them to resist the urge to put him on that card and promote him for WrestleMania. So if that happens, we'll have to see what brand he lands on. You know, I don't know. Maybe he'll get that free agent treatment like Brock Lesnar has. He can bounce around from one brand to the next. Stardust, you like the Stardust, huh? You like the Stardust? Stardust. It looked like that thing from Labyrinth, the movie Labyrinth. Yeah, 2-for-1. 2-for-1. AT&T Stadium put up a tweet the other day that they quickly deleted. They were basically doing 2-for-1 deals and giving away free WrestleMania tickets for, I don't remember if it was both nights or just one of the nights. When you're already starting with that, that's not a good sign. That's not a good sign. Stardust and the Ascension. Oh, the Cosmic Wasteland. How can we forget about the Cosmic Wasteland? Pan's Labyrinth. Thank you. Okay. I'm thinking of the David Bowie movie. Pan's Labyrinth. I saw that. I saw both of them. I enjoyed them both. Did I see the Sopranos Super Bowl commercial? I did. That was very cool. Texas Stadium might have been a bit too ambitious. Well, look, I mean, they packed it in 6 years ago, but you're doing back-to-back nights. You know, you're not going to get 100,000 people in there on back-to-back nights. So they're only going to set the stadium up each night for a certain amount. I don't know if it'll be 50,000, 60,000. It's not going to be easy for them to fill the stadium on both nights. When you do two nights of WrestleMania, you know, WrestleMania 32 was not two nights, it was just the one. So it just makes it that much harder to fill the stadium on back-to-back nights. This is only the second year they're doing this. You know, last year was the first ever two-night WrestleMania in an actual stadium in front of actual people. So this is the biggest test yet for a two-night WrestleMania, because they have never been in a venue this big on back-to-back nights like this. It's like New Japan running the Tokyo Dome on consecutive nights. WWE with WrestleMania has not done this before. You know, last year was the first two-night WrestleMania. That was not, you know, that stadium, I don't believe, was as big as Texas Stadium. Where were they last year? They were in Raymond James, right? Yeah, they were in Raymond James last year. It's going to be a test. It's going to be a test. It might be, yeah, right, DJT Cartoons. It might be time for the tarps. It might be time for the tarps and to dim the lights. Hard to do that, though, when you're outdoors. But I guess Texas Stadium, I think actually it's indoors, isn't it? I should know this because I was there. It is indoors. Yeah, it is indoors. I don't remember if it has a retractable roof, though. But actually, you know what? I think it does. I'm trying to think. I was at WrestleMania 32, and I want to say that it was partially open. I could be thinking of a different stadium I was in, but I think the roof is retractable, I think, and I want to say it was open like in the middle. It wasn't completely open. Yeah, QR code commercials are very dumb. I saw that one, for the crypto thing at the Super Bowl. I thought that was stupid. Dry chicken without flavor. Roman Reigns should crap on Cowboys fans for heat. Roman Reigns doesn't need to get cheap heat like that. Lone Wolf says, I guess you were right, Solo. They all come crawling back. It's like I've said it for years, man. I've said it for years on the podcast. Inevitably, at the end of the day, they all come crawling back. Doesn't matter how many shoot interviews they do. It doesn't matter how many things, how many horrible things they say and how happy they are to be where they are. They all come crawling back for the money. 99% of the time. You might find that rare exception, but they always come crawling back. Money talks, my friend. Money talks. That's how the game is played. And I also think having a kid, you know, and starting a family also changes your perspective on things. You get older. Cody now is, what is Cody, 36? I think he's 36. So he's older. He's got a child, you know, he might have another one. It changes your perspective. Your priorities change. Morphine says Randy Savage didn't. You know what, though? I don't think that was entirely his choice. So I wouldn't use Randy Savage as an example. But you know what? Even if Savage didn't pass away when he did, Savage would have been back too. You know, him starting to do stuff there right before he died and being in the video game and all that, that was the beginning of something. I guarantee you Savage would have ended up back in bed with WWE. They would have put him in the Hall of Fame. He would have appeared on TV a couple of times. Even Savage would have eventually been back. I do believe that. Bob the Builder with the $2 super chat, and that might be it. What a wild year so far, he says. What a wild year so far. Wild indeed, and we're not even a full 2 months into the year. And Bob the Builder says, only CM Punk will never go back. Time will tell. I'm not ready to close the door on that either. Time will tell. He might be a lot older and grayer at that point, but I don't know that I would go that far. They all come crawling back. I like the Coog's advice in the chat. I agree. Don't get married and don't have kids. Problem solved. See, it just makes life a lot simpler. You got to admit, it makes life a lot simpler and a lot cheaper. Frost says, I really wish Savage would have lived to come back. It's a sin that he got put into the Hall of Fame and wasn't there to give his own acceptance speech. I will always resent Vince McMahon for doing that. Never should have happened. Never should have happened that way. Larry C. says The Rock will never come back. See, that I disagree on. In fact, I think there's a pretty decent chance we're going to see The Rock at WrestleMania this year. Not in a match. I was thinking about this. I saw that tweet that The Rock sent to, was it Jamie Iovine or whoever? He was responding to someone's tweet about his Super Bowl appearance. And if you remember when The Rock did the Super Bowl thing the other night, he did the whole, you know, and the millions, and he didn't pause, but he did and the millions. And he said there was like, it was like a little Easter egg, and very soon he's going to be doing the pause and the millions. And already people are looking at that as maybe a little, you know, maybe a little insight into what he might be doing very soon, maybe a WrestleMania appearance. You know, look, we're going to get Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns in the main event of WrestleMania. We know that, right? We don't. It might be winner take all. It might not be. If you were to ask me right now, and I'm not giving you my final predictions, it's still early, but I think there's a better chance of Roman Reigns winning that match than Brock Lesnar. Now, if Roman Reigns, as the heel, goes in there and wins at WrestleMania and retains his championship, is that really the way that they're going to end the final night of WrestleMania? I would think there's a better chance that if Roman wins, we have The Rock show up as a surprise to maybe go down to the ring, or maybe he just kind of stands on the stage, but he can go down to the ring and he can go face to face with Roman Reigns. And that stare down closes out WrestleMania 38 to tease a match between the two of them at WrestleMania 39. So not only will The Rock eventually be back, I think The Rock may be coming back a lot sooner than people think. So that's something to watch out for right there. Because I think they're going to do everything in their power. They want that match so badly. They want Rock and Roman Reigns so badly. And it doesn't even have to be for a title. It doesn't mean that Roman is going to hold on to the belt for another year. I don't think he is. I don't think Rock and Roman should be for a championship. I've said this before. If they want to do Rock and Roman as an attraction in Hollywood next year at WrestleMania, I mean, that'd be a huge match. I get it. I don't know if it's going to be any good, but okay, fine, get The Rock, but it does not need to be for a championship. We've already had The Rock come back and win the championship. The Rock does not have to be wrestling for the championship. You could do that as a special attraction. You've got two nights now of WrestleMania. They're going to do this every year. So you could headline one night. That's a big enough attraction. I'll make an exception to my rule that the title does not go on in the main event that night, because when you have an attraction that big, like they did with Rock and Cena, you make an exception. But I think Roman could easily drop that belt to somebody else, maybe even, you know, McIntyre come SummerSlam, or if they're going to do a UK pay-per-view in September, that's been rumored. I would not be doing that for the championship. So it makes it a lot easier then, because I think it makes it less predictable if it's not for a title. That's my take on it. I'm not sure Rock needs to be wrestling, but if he's going to wrestle, it does not need to be for the championship. Remember, the last time we saw The Rock in a real full-blown match, not that 6-second match he had with Eric Rowan at WrestleMania 32. He was wrestling Cena at WrestleMania 29, and he tore like so many muscles in his body, and he got a hernia, and that was almost a decade ago. That was almost 10 years ago. He's 10 years older now, or next year he'll be 10 years older. So I'm not so sure it's smart of him to even get in the ring and do a full-blown match. That's right. That's right. Mr. Dynamite says he tore... Well, no. So let me correct you on that. He did get injured in the first match as well with John Cena, the match in Miami. That, I believe, was a torn, not abdomen, that was a torn hamstring. That was a leg injury. And he came out on Raw the next night. He was walking around fine, because I guess you can do that even if you hurt your hamstring. The serious injuries came the following year in the rematch. That's where he tore his adductor muscle, I think he tore, and he had a hernia, and there was something else as well. And he had to have surgery. I remember him tweeting the photo from the hospital bed. You know, he had the fucking the hospital hat on his head, and he's like, you know, I got the thumbs up. Or maybe he flipped the camera off, whatever it was. But again, you know, he was tearing muscles and falling apart 10 years ago. I mean, I don't know if I trust him in a long match now. But The Rock is such a big name, you know, and he truly does. His name transcends wrestling now. If you can get The Rock for a match, you know, if I'm running a company and The Rock says, I want to wrestle at your show, what am I going to say? No. It's like, all right, well, we'll work something out. It just doesn't have to be for a championship. He's so far above the championship anyway. You know what I mean? Like, some guys just get to that level where they don't need the title, you know, like, John Cena, there's a story there, because one more title and he breaks the record. So at some point, maybe next year at WrestleMania, you do a title chase program with John Cena. Absolutely. Absolutely. The Rock, you know, been there, done that, came back, beat Cena. Actually, well, he beat Punk, but beat Punk and then defended it against Cena. I don't know. You don't need to go back to that well again. Yeah, Frost, that's right. That's a good point. Rock's injuries ruined what was supposed to be the setup for a match with him and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. It's amazing how one thing could just impact so many other things. They were going to shoot the angle on Raw the next night after WrestleMania 29 and have Brock attack Rock and set up their match for New Orleans. Rock got hurt. He couldn't do it. they ended up going in a different direction. We got Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, and Brock Lesnar ended the streak. Maybe Undertaker would still be undefeated today. Who knows? Mario DeRose, how awesome was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in 87 with that awesome entrance song, Sirius? Yeah, that was the Alan Parsons project, right? Steamboat was, as great as Steamboat was in 87 and, you know, the early 80s, Steamboat was great going back to the 70s. But, I mean, Ric Flair has said he and Steamboat had so many matches, hundreds of matches together, that never saw the light of day because it was, they weren't filmed. It was at live events. And but Steamboat, as great as he was in 87, Steamboat in 89. With Flair, he tore it up that year. You want to see Steamboat at his finest, you go watch a Steamboat match from 1989. Who would have faced Undertaker then at WrestleMania 30 if Rock had not gotten hurt? It's impossible to know. We never got to that point where anybody else was really... I don't remember anybody else being rumored, you know, for a match with Undertaker that year. Bray Wyatt was first coming up. They had him slotted with John Cena. Would have been a bigger deal for him to go in there and beat Cena, and instead they had Cena beat him. But I don't know. I don't recall what the full roster looked like at that time. You had the Shield guys. You know, I had actually pitched an idea on my show about having the Undertaker do a handicap match against the not a handicap, but a gauntlet match against all three members of the Shield. And I said that if they were determined to end the streak, I would have given it to the Shield. And I would have had Roman Reigns at the end of the gauntlet be the one to pin the Undertaker. And they put the Undertaker streak to bed, and it would have been huge for the Shield, who were getting the big push at the time. But you could have used that as a way to ultimately, eventually break up the Shield, you know, with one guy taking credit for it. I forgot exactly how I pitched the follow-up on it, but I was never a big fan of breaking the streak at all. I only pitched that idea as, if you're going to do it, here's one way of doing it. And I would use those three guys, and I would have Rollins and Undertaker start out the gauntlet. Undertaker wins. Ambrose is next. He beats Ambrose. It comes down to Undertaker and Reigns. Reigns ultimately puts him down. And there was a story there because the Shield had attacked the Undertaker previously. So there was a history there. But I mapped the whole thing out as far as how I would do it and the follow-up and everything. And at least there would have been, you know. Look, you know, they went with Lesnar. The best thing I can say about it is they went all the way with Brock. It would have been a complete waste if they went with Brock and then they didn't really push him or he disappeared. You know, they went all the way with him. They made him an unstoppable monster. The problem is they made him too much of an unstoppable monster because at some point he ended up going through everybody and there was nobody left for him to beat. That was the problem. But it's okay. They brought back Goldberg. They had Goldberg beat Brock. So it's all good. The streak never should have ended in the first place. I still maintain that. I will always maintain that. BlissFan says, it propelled Brock, and he dominated for 6 years. Absolutely, and I'm glad that they propelled him and they didn't waste it, but you could have propelled Brock Lesnar without the streak. You didn't really need to give the guy a lot of credibility. The guy went to UFC and became the heavyweight champion. So believe me, they could have propelled Brock all the same, even if he didn't beat Undertaker at WrestleMania. You could have still sent him to SummerSlam. He could have destroyed the champion and gone on that monster run. You know, but it gave Paul Heyman something else to say. The man who conquered the streak, right? It gave them another tagline. You could have pushed him the same exact way without having him break the streak. But they gave me a memory. I was in the building that night, and I will tell you that I don't know that for the rest of my life, any other events I ever go to, that I will ever be at a wrestling show or a WrestleMania where I in person have ever or will ever observe and be part of a moment as shocking as the one that we got that night. The crowd reaction, I'll never forget that for the rest of my life. Truly, when I say shocking, true shock and awe in a big-ass stadium with 75,000 people. I've never seen anything like it in my life, probably never will again. So at least they gave me that moment. All right, let's take one last look at the poll here. Again, 88% thumbs up, 12% thumbs down. I thought it was an excellent episode of Dynamite Tonight. Very excited for where things are headed at Revolution. One last reminder here that, again, the retro episode 13 is up for our Legends tier members from Super Bowl Sunday in 08. And, of course, all channel members can join live tomorrow night on the channel, 8:30 Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. If that changes, I will tweet and let you know, but that is the plan. Exclusively for channel members, we're going to open up the phone lines. I'm turning the show over to you guys. We'll go for at least an hour. If I don't get to everybody, we'll do more of these, but that's tomorrow night. So hopefully you guys can join, and I will probably be live with you on Friday night. I will probably be live on Friday, but I don't know, you know, two tape shows. I saw what happened on SmackDown already. Rampage is on a little bit earlier. Don't forget, 7 Eastern. So if I go live, it will be an hour earlier because when SmackDown goes off the air, I could go live a few minutes after that. So if I am live on Friday night, it'll be about 10:15. But Saturday, Elimination Chamber, 12 Eastern. Is when the show starts. When it ends, come back to the YouTube channel. I'll be live with my recap. So probably after 3 o'clock Eastern, Saturday afternoon, if you're around, join me for the live review. And then 7:44 is going to be a big show. A lot to talk about on episode 7:44 of the podcast on Sunday. Cody Rhodes, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and other WrestleMania rumors. Ric Flair said some stuff on his podcast that actually rubbed me the wrong way. He's going to actually make me defend WWE. Can't believe this, but we're going to talk about all that on the podcast on Sunday. So be well, stay safe, and I will see you guys for the call-in show tomorrow night, and a lot more sound off coming up this weekend. So until then, take care, guys.